Welcome to the Haunting, Unearthly, and Paranormal Stories podcast. Each week will be a different event, whether paranormal or some other strange and unexplained happening. Maybe even a haunting located near you will be examined and relayed to you. These events and stories are based on events have been given to us by the people who experienced these events in their own lives. These stories will take you to the depths of fear and back again. You will learn of places haunted by spectrals and other shadows. You will learn about ghost investigations, the demonic happenings and possible possessions, dream homes taken over by paranormal or supernatural events. Within all these stories, you will question yourself and locations you have been to, those times you caught movement out of the corner of your eye, or thought you did. You may just learn that it likely was some spirit from another plane of existence trying to get your attention. You may start questioning different locations you currently visit and begin to wonder if those slight noises that you are hearing are truly the building settling or someone from a past life walking down the hallway toward you. These weekly journeys we take together will lead us down deserted roads, into the deep and dark forests, and through the doors of buildings we should not enter. Pull up a chair and join me as we take a step into the unknown here on the Haunting, Unearthly, and Paranormal Stories podcast. If you would like to get in touch with us, you can email us at hupspodcast@yahoo.com or contact us through our website, http://hupspodcast.com. Just remember, believe those that you choose or believe in none. It is your choice. Hello, folks, and welcome to another exciting week here at Dan's Dabble and Babble. I am so stoked for you to hear the interview that I have with this week's guest. I don't want to give too much preamble. It's all kind of contained in the interview, but she was a lot of fun, so we're going to get to that shortly. But first, I just wanted to check in a little bit. There's a lot of exciting things happening with Dan's Dabble and Babble. We're sponsoring with Hydronic Hydration, as you just heard, to do a giveaway, which I think is awesome. So definitely enter that contest. The weather here has been absolutely gorgeous, which is just kind of one of those moments where it's like, this is exactly why I'm so happy that I've made the decisions that I've made and that that's led me to where I am. My cousin is going to be visiting me tomorrow, a different cousin than the one that we had on the podcast a couple weeks ago, so I'm excited to show her around town in St. Petersburg. I touched on this last time, but I really want to make sure that I give proper reverence to West Side Story, the new version of West Side Story directed by Steven Spielberg, because it is absolutely visually stunning, and it is now on Disney Plus. So before, on the last episode, it wasn't quite on Disney Plus. So as soon as you're done listening to this, you need to make your way to Disney Plus and watch West Side Story. Ariana DeBose, who plays Anita, is really just it's such an incredible performance. Rita Moreno is worth the price of admission if you are don't already have Disney Plus. It's honestly worth checking it out just so you can see West Side Story. All right. So I am so excited to bring to you this interview. And so before we do that, we will have just a brief word from our sponsors, and then we will get to the inimitable interview with Lorraine Ball. Started in the midst of the pandemic, the founder of Hydranique Hydration, a frontline healthcare worker, started developing constant headaches. A landmark research study published early during the pandemic showed that up to 81% of frontline healthcare workers developed new headaches, mainly because of their PPE, personal protective equipment like face masks and face shields, which prevented them from eating and drinking properly while on the job. He would leave work tired, dehydrated, and burnt out. The founder looked for a healthy drink with all the necessary vitamins and minerals, but with no sugar. Something that was keto-friendly and healthy, but most powdered drinks on the market have a ton of sugar and caffeine. That's why he created Hydranique Hydration, sugar-free, keto-friendly, plant-based, antioxidant-rich, electrolyte powder packets for daily use containing all the essential vitamins and minerals with a refreshing taste. Their product contains elderberry, which has immune-boosting properties for support during cold and flu season. Hydranique Hydration electrolyte powder packets can also fit in your bag or suitcase when traveling. Remember traveling? So if you're having trouble with eating and drinking healthy during your busy day in 2022, but want a sugar-free, keto-friendly vitamin drink, give Hydranique Hydration a try. There are 30 electrolyte powder packets in a pouch, perfect for a one-month supply. You can visit the website www.hydraniquehydration.com. That's www.hydraniquehydration.com. It's the word hydration and unique mashed together. That's www.hydraniquehydration.com. Or search for Hydranique Hydration on Amazon.com, where they are offering a $10 discount coupon at checkout for the next week. Listeners of Dan's Dabble and Babble, I am very excited to bring with you an interview with an entrepreneur, an author, a professional speaker, and host of More Than a Few Words. She's someone with creative ideas, practical tips, and decades of real-world experience. I bring to you Indianapolis resident Lorraine Ball. Lorraine, thank you so much for joining.
My pleasure. I have to admit, I'm going to have to rewrite that bio because when you say decades of experience, I sound so old.
You know, that's you don't look it. So I want to just tell my listeners right now, she's got her video on and certainly I would guess mid-30s, spry young thing over there. So she started when she was 15, 2 decades is still multiple decades, Lorraine. So don't sell yourself short.
I like that. We'll go with it. Okay. It's not true, but we'll go with it.
Oh, well, listen, it's okay to embellish every now and then. But thank you so much. So we were just talking a little bit because I asked about your area code, you being in Indianapolis, just talking about the weather. So just want to get started with what have you been up to lately? How's Indianapolis? How's the Indianapolis winter? And just how's Lorraine?
Well, so Lorraine is coping reasonably well with the Indianapolis winter because we've had these breaks. We've had more sunshine. When I first moved here, I thought that this was the grayest place in the world. And either I've gotten used to it or it is sunnier this winter.
Now, where did you move from?
Well, most recently, Texas. Okay. But you can tell by the accent, this is not a native Texan. I started in New York. And wandered my way around the country till I ended up here.
Sure. I love a good wandering path. I always describe mine. I did my great Midwest tour. I was telling you, I grew up in Terre Haute, Indiana, spent some time in Milwaukee, then Chicago. And for me, what I always explain to people is the cold and the snow and all of that is one thing, but you hit the nail on the head. The grayness just gets so old so quickly. And the seasonal depression is so real. And I think I really noticed it when I moved to Milwaukee because they're on central time. So it would be pitch dark at like 4:30. You just never see the sun. And that was always for me what really wore on me.
Absolutely. When we first got here, I was doing a lot of traveling, and so I could plan my trips. I could go, okay, January, I'm going to do somewhere in the South in January. I'm going to go, Northeast, even growing up in New York, even though we were cold, it just felt like there was more sun. And coming Definitely. Up from Dallas, this was really an adjustment.
Well, and Indianapolis isn't terrible about it, but I was really, so in Terre Haute, it would be, everything would shut down. There was nothing to do in the winter. Milwaukee was better prepared. It was still miserable to be out in the winter. Indianapolis does okay, but I'm sure New York, I mean, nothing ever stops in New York. So it still feels like there's life in the winter. And so it's funny you mentioned when I was in grad school in Milwaukee, I made it a point to go somewhere warm every January. And the first year, a couple of friends and I went to Arizona, and I made so much fun of it when I was down there then, because we were there the first day and it was in the low 70s, maybe high 60s. So it felt amazing for us. We're in shorts and a t-shirt, but all the waiters at every place we went, we were like, please sit us outside. And they were getting the heaters, and the waiters and waitresses were freezing. But I have to tell you, I just talked about this on my last episode. This has been a really rough winter, and it's, this is only my second winter here, but it's been cold, Lorraine. It's been in the 40s, and it's a wet cold. And people told me that when I moved down here my first year. Last year, I think, was a more mild winter. And I don't know how I ever survived up north, because it was frigid, and it lasted for maybe 2.5 weeks, but it was a rough 2.5 weeks, Lorraine.
Sorry, not feeling sorry. Just putting that out.
That is totally fair.
Not feeling sorry for somebody who had to deal with 2 weeks of winter.
Two and a half. I earned that extra half week. So many sweatshirts, Lorraine. Mm-hmm. So many sweatshirts. I will say that it's fun every now and then, because I have all of these sweaters and things that I never get to wear. I had a great sweater game, and people don't know down here, because I never get a chance to break it out. My life is tough.
You know what? When we first, because we'd been living in Dallas, when we'd been there about 14 years, and my kids were little, and we went to visit some friends in Colorado, and we were going to go hiking in the hills. And I'm like, oh, but I didn't bring coats for the kids. And they opened up their closet and they said, no problem, we have coats. And I thought to myself, you got to be kidding. Why do you have so many coats? Mm-hmm. And then we moved to Indiana. And right. Now I understand.
Exactly.
You have like three different windbreakers. You've got all these hoodies. You've got, you've just got layers. And I do a lot of hiking, and I go outside even in the winter, and I walk. And so I've got depending on the temperature, is it windy? It's this set of clothes. If it's dry, it's this set of clothes. And I never thought I would get to this place, but yeah. I've got coats.
Exactly. And it changes so much from day to day, hour to hour. You just, you can never predict it. So I definitely get that. The closet fills up quickly, but it's one of those things that if you're prepared for the weather, it's great. And like you said, you can get out and you can still do things if you're prepared for it. But I always said that we always hoped for mild winters in Indiana. So there were a lot of people who just didn't prepare. So they'd be in 30 degree weather in like a hoodie and wonder why they were so freezing. And it's like, you just got it. And that was another difference from Milwaukee. Everybody was bundled up. I got my first parka and I was ready. You just got to take it on. But enough about the weather. I mean, everybody's most exciting topic. So you describe yourself as an entrepreneur. So tell me about that. What are your entrepreneurial endeavors? That's such a, I always fumble over that word. So let's just power on through.
So I started as an entrepreneur when I was still in corporate, where I was running business entities inside larger businesses and kind of skunk work projects, and turning a profit when people were like, no, that's just an internal service. I'm like, no, I can make money if you let me do it the way that I want to do it. And I did that for a while. And then there was that morning where I woke up and I went, you know, this is stupid because I can make money at this if I just do it on my own. And
well, yeah,
so,
especially if you're recognizing opportunities that other people are passing by.
Yeah. And that was, well, so the biggest one was, I was running a marketing team inside a large insurance company, and I had a big staff, and the company was downsizing. And I argued that instead of downsizing, if they would let me bring in outside work. So we did projects for the Indianapolis Motor Speedway and the zoo and one of the local newspapers. With my staff team that was supposed to only be working on internal corporate stuff. And we made enough money that I was paying salaries of the people they were thinking they were going to lay off. And it was just this really interesting project. And I did it with one hand tied behind my back and a blindfold on because they kept saying, well, you can't do this and you can't do that. And finally, there was that moment where I went, okay, this is stupid because I can make money at this. I'm just going to go off and do it. So
well, I want to follow up on that because I'm really fascinated by that concept. How did you get the higher ups to say yes to allow you to do that? Because especially in the corporate world, there's so much bureaucracy and things get slowed down. And sometimes it feels like people look for reasons to say no. Mm-hmm. And, you know, of course, I mean, there's, you're offering them the benefit of keeping people on and keeping salaries paid. So there's that benefit, but that's still a big gamble if it's not been done in the company before. So tell me about that.
So part of it is, I was really lucky very early on in my corporate career. I had a psych profile done and they let me read it. Mm. And the profile basically said I was nuts. And so every job I had after that, I would go into the job and say, look, this is what the profile says, and this is what you're hiring. And so I got away with a lot of stuff that other people just wouldn't get away with because I'm like, you hired me to do this. You hired me to fix this problem, run this team. You hired me when I showed up in 4-inch purple heels and an orange shirt. And you know,
okay, I have to put a pin in that right now because I just this weekend was telling my boyfriend how much I love the combination of the colors purple and orange. So just for that moment alone, I am so glad that we're doing this interview. And I'm sure you looked fabulous. I can picture it now. I would hire you. I would make that the company uniform.
Well, they I found out later that there was a lot of conversation about that outfit, followed by a lot of my other outfits, but you know, whatever. But they hired me knowing that I was going to be different, that I was going to bring ideas, and I rode that wave for a very long time. And so in this last job, when I came to them with this idea, they were like, this is crazy, you can't do it. And I'm like, look, what do we got to lose? You're gonna lay these people off, you're gonna pay all of this money in outsourcing and benefits, you know, severance pay. Let me see if I can make it work. And we did. We did for quite a while. And then when we didn't, everybody was well prepared for their next journey. And I was ready to be like, okay, I know I can do this because I did it on somebody else's nickel. And if you take the gloves off, I can do it. So I started my own company. I ran it for 19 years till I sold it last year.
Oh, wow. Congratulations.
Thank you very much. And it started as a traditional marketing company because let's go back in time 20 years. There was no Facebook. There was no LinkedIn. There was no Twitter. And so all of the tools of small business marketing that we take for granted today did not exist. So I built a marketing company for small businesses based on very different tools and watched the world change and went, well, we're going to try this. And so over the years, we did a lot of, we built a business on things that did not exist when we started the company.
That is fascinating. I mean, because you're right. I take it for granted, even just, you know, as I build and grow this podcast, how mm-hmm. much there is no buy-in to so many of the tools that I use to get my word out there. So that's then and in just 20 years, my how mm-hmm. how the mm-hmm. world is totally different.
Oh, yeah. And it was, you know, it happened really fast. And it was one of these things that was like, okay, today Facebook is just for college students. And then the next day it's like, no, everybody can be on it. And then suddenly it was, well, businesses can be on it and we'll let them do splash pages. And so, you know, it just kept changing. And I just decided I was going to ride that roller coaster and did. And when I sold the company, I really wanted to figure out what I wanted. And so before I sold the business, I broke off two pieces of it. The podcast, more than a few words, I was not willing to give that up.
Sure.
And also the training was always a part of the business. I'm a teacher at my heart. Mm-hmm. And so I spun off the workshops and training used to be lead generation for the core agency. That's sure. Now a standalone business. So I sold the first business and I'm on to my second one. Whatever this is. Yeah.
And I was going to ask about that because to have something that you spent almost 20 years building, there's got to be a lot of emotions involved. So with the podcast and the corporate trainings, it sounds like you kind of kept what was near and dear to your heart. But what was that like to kind of go through, kind of what led you to the decision to sell, and looking back, what were kind of the difficult moments in coming to that decision and letting go of so much of that?
So, you know, five or six years before I sold the company, I started thinking about, well, maybe I'll do something different because I've changed jobs. I've moved around. I usually sort of reinvent myself every few years. And suddenly I realized I'd been doing that for 15 years. That was a long time. And I thought, you know, maybe I'm ready for kind of that next step. And had an offer and realized I didn't like the person who wanted to buy the business and knew that I did not want to do that to my employees and my customers. And so that sort of set me on this path of, okay, I'm going to explore opportunities. I'm going to figure out what the business is worth and I'm going to get ready to sell. And the biggest thing was systems and processes and making sure that my employees had relationships with my customers. So if I wasn't there, the customers didn't really care because they had relationships with Sam or Simon or Stacy, all of whom's names started with S. That was not a requirement to work at Round Peg, but I did have a cluster at that moment. But the idea was that they became the face of the company. I even changed the Facebook Live so that it was Sam, one of my content people. He was the face of Facebook Live. It wasn't me anymore. So even though I was still running the business, I was definitely trying to make it less dependent on me. And that was really important. The other thing is I really love traveling. And of course, we're not going to talk about how the pandemic interfered with what I thought my life was supposed to be. But we had gotten into a place where we were traveling twice a year and we were doing, you know, 2-week trips, 3-week trips. And I like that. And so selling the business and looking forward, that was like, okay, that'll put me in a place where I can do more of that. I mean, I can work from anywhere, but I also really like that flexibility. So started having a conversation with the company that ultimately bought Round Peg in January of 2020. And before the pandemic, and we talked on and off throughout that first year and finally kind of came to terms at the end of the year and sold. And that was a lovely thing.
So,
you know, regrets, they're a different company and they have a different approach. And so there are things that they do that I'm like, that's not how it's supposed to be done. And then I have to remind myself that if I really cared that much, I would still be running it.
Exactly. Well, mm-hmm. and it just from listening to you, it's incredible because it's obvious how much that you've just kind of relied on your intuition and gut feelings. But it's also obvious to me that you have really built strong relationships with the people that you worked with and the people mm-hmm. that work for you and with you. So kind of thinking back to the moment where you or the moments that led to you deciding to strike out on your own, where did that resolve come from? And kind of what were the emotions involved in making that decision?
Well, you know, it's funny. I stumbled on recently, maybe a few years ago now, the essay I wrote when I went to grad school. And my entrance essay talked about the fact that I wanted the MBA because what I wanted to do was work in a consulting environment with small businesses, that really was my passion. Mm-hmm. And then I went to graduate school and I took some corporate marketing courses and I loved product marketing and I loved all these other things. And I kind of forgot that what I originally set out to do was this small business consulting. And when I was at my last gig in corporate and I realized how broken the corporate system was, I thought, you know what, I can do this better. And I kind of know what I want to do. I know what I'm good at. And it was funny because I stumbled back across that essay and went, wow, I knew this all along. I just got a little sidetracked. And so that was fun. It was interesting because people say that entrepreneurs are risk takers, mm-hmm. but entrepreneurs will tell you we're not taking a risk, that we are, we're betting. We're optimists. We believe it's going to work out. We believe and we're confident. And I think that's, you know, the mark of a real entrepreneur is somebody who believes that they can pull it off, because if they didn't, they wouldn't do it. And I knew based on things I had done in corporate that I'm good at the numbers. I know how to make the numbers work. And I knew I could do it better than I had done it inside of corporate.
That's beautiful. You know, your story is really resonating with me in a way, a much different way, but I describe my own career thus far as kind of this random walk where mm-hmm. I have just kind of been open to different possibilities mm-hmm. and it's led me to places that I've never thought that I would end up or never imagined that I would end up. And, you know, have just kind of been lucky enough that for me, it's worked out that kind of each step I've gotten happier as, mm-hmm. as things have gone by. But it sounds like you were open to in graduate school, that your response to corporate marketing and that led you to some opportunities. But through the heart of it all, it's incredible how important it sounds like really having a mission-driven focus and identifying what that passion mm-hmm. was to your success. Because, you know, I think, especially as an entrepreneur, if your heart isn't in it, you can't fake that. I mean, you can kind of, there are a lot of jobs that you can go in, clock out and fake it and get done what you need to do to keep the paycheck coming. But when the buck stops with you, it's got to be a much different thing.
Well, you know what? And when I was running the agency, I was part of a networking group of other business owners that were all running digital agencies. And we were from all over the country. And it was a really nice place to be. And some of the companies were bigger, some were smaller. One of the guys sold his agency and started a business working with people who wanted to buy and sell agencies. So I talked to him a lot. But we all agreed that if you didn't love it, you couldn't do it. That if it stopped being fun, that was the moment you knew you needed to let go. Mm-hmm. Because life's too short. I mean, it really, really is too short to get up and hate your job, you know, and I get it if you're in a position where you just have to pay the bills and sure. you got to put food on the table. I totally understand that, but I'm not in that place. At Definitely. This point, you know, I can say this is what I want to do and this is not what I want to do. And I feel lucky about that.
And to that end, I think kind of along those lines, sometimes it's difficult to know the difference between paying your dues and just making it work. So, you know, mm-hmm. there's going to be periods where, you know, you just kind of have mm-hmm. to get through the muck to get to that end goal. And you certainly don't want to cash in too soon, but I think there is a real difference where if you start to lose sight of that goal or start to question or not be able to articulate that goal, I think that's another sign that it's time to move on.
I told my kids this and a lot of the young, I work with a lot of young professionals over the years that their time at Round Peg was their first real job. And then they'd mm-hmm. go off and they'd work in a bigger company. And I'm like, look, you're going to wake up 6 months into the job. It's going to happen. And you're going to wake up and you're going to think you've sold your soul to the devil because it's not going to be like Round Peg. It's going to be different. It's going to be corporate. You need to hang on 6 more months. Mm-hmm. And if at the end of that time, you still think you sold your soul to the devil, you need to get out. Feel free to call me at 6 months and I'll talk to you off the ledge. And I can't tell you how many conversations I had. And it's funny because there are some of the folks that got through the other half and said, no, once I got past that hump, it was great. And there were three of my folks who all went to work for the same company at different times. And I laughed and I said, you're going to hate it. I mean, I love you. Go right. for the money. They're going to pay you twice what I pay you. Sure. Go. But you're good. And they're like, well, you know, I'm like, and, you know, one lasted 11 months, one lasted 10 months. And they all went on to much better jobs afterwards. So it was a sure. great springboard.
Sure.
But yeah, it's, you know, you have to kind of pay your dues and get over that first hump. But definitely. If it's still painful at a year, time to go.
Well, yeah. And so I interned at a place where, so I'm a chemist by trade, and one of the chemists told me that she really believed that people should work somewhere else before they came to Lubrizol, was the name of the company, because it's hard to have the perspective of how great Lubrizol was. And as an intern, I absolutely loved it. They were paying me fantastically for an intern. I was like, this is amazing. And then I took a job elsewhere for my first job out of undergrad. And I was like, this is what they were talking about. That's part of life, is getting those perspectives and having those opportunities to even know how to measure things against one another.
Oh, yeah. Well, both of my kids at different times worked for me. And I always, it wasn't their passion for either of them. And my daughter actually worked for me for a year. And it wasn't until she went somewhere else and she called, you know, we would talk and she's like, okay, now I get it.
Yeah.
Now I understand. I can't work for you, but that's a really cool environment and I need to find that somewhere else.
Right. Right. Well, I just want to say I'm having the best time talking to you. You have such a great perspective, but I really want to, and I want to talk a bit about your authorship. I'm a writer myself. I love writing, so I would love to get into that. But before we do, I want to have some fun and just get to know you. So, are you a TV watcher? If so, what are you watching these days?
I do watch TV. I like it at the end of the day, mostly to fall asleep to.
So, I relate to that. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. I love sci-fi. Discovery, when Picard comes back, I'm all in. Any kind of sci-fi fantasy, I'm just a geek and I really like that. I like good formula, police dramas. I also really, this is my new favorite. My husband is an artist. And so we started with Blown Away,
glass
blowing. And then we did, he's a metal sculptor. So then there was a reality show that was just a metal competition. And then we just finished up 4 seasons of the Great Pottery Throwdown. It is a British reality show, pottery, and fabulous. And I really admire the art, but there's no prize. It's literally these people stop their lives for 10 weeks mm-hmm. for bragging rights just to say they won. And I love that.
That is so British. And I love that too. I don't know if you've watched any of Great British Bake Off, but it's very much the same thing. Mm-hmm. It's just so low stakes. The contestants are so friendly with one another. It could not be more different than American reality. There's mm-hmm. no drama. When they mess up, they just laugh about it and move on. And it's just refreshing to watch that kind of a thing.
Yeah, they have to get their clay into the dry. They have to get their pieces into the drying room, and you'll see one guy get his piece in and turn around and go, "You're not going to make it," and he's in there helping. And I'm like, yeah. "It's a competition, dude." But it's all for the art. But
I know, I love that.
We were in Corning, New York, and we went to the Corning Glass Museum, mm-hmm. and I came round the corner. And there were all of the pieces from one of the seasons.
Oh, that's so cool.
So, and it was because we had seen how they were made, and then to see them in person, that was really fun.
We have we have the Chihulian Museum in St. Petersburg, and yes, it's so that just even just walking by the artwork that you can see from the street is just it's mm-hmm. stunning. So yeah, that's really cool.
There were a whole bunch of his pieces up in it wasn't the Brooklyn Botanical Gardens, it was the New York Botanical Gardens up in the Bronx, mm-hmm. and so you had all of this spectacular glasswork in and among the flowers. It's
stunning. And his work is just so colorful. That's mm-hmm. what I love the most about it is and the mix of colors is just it's incredible. It's mm-hmm. so cool. Okay, so what about podcasts other than More Than a Few Words and Dan's mm-hmm. Dabble and Babble? What are some podcast recommendations?
I love the Pop Culture Happy Hour. It's an NPR podcast, and it's too hard to keep up with everything, books, music, shows. And I get introduced to so many really awesome things. There was some obscure little play, something Comet. And I happened to hear the interview, and we were in New York, and I could get tickets, and I would never in a million years have said, "Oh, that's the show I want to see."
Sure.
And it was fabulous. So
that's amazing.
I love that. I love How I Built This. Mm. There's a brand one, what I really want to get my marketing on. And of course, now I can't remember exactly what it's called. I'll have to send you that as a follow-up after the show, but it's all about brands that have changed their identity for good or for bad.
Oh,
and kind of the stories behind it and some of the branding things that went well and some that didn't. And just listening to the creative directors from the different agencies talking about the process and talking about the problems that they had with the clients and when they thought they had just completely blown it. It's sort of like Mad Men on steroids without all the drama.
That sounds great.
Yeah, I really like that.
That's awesome. Now, you mentioned you love to travel. So where are you itching to go to next?
Oh, so the trip that we were supposed to do in fall of 2020 was Italy. I've been to Rome and I've been to Florence. But I really haven't done a lot of the rest of Italy. I really want to go to Venice before it sinks completely into the sea.
Right.
And I want to go and I want to see Pisa. I absolutely want to go to Tuscany. Mostly I want to eat my way from one end of Italy to the other.
I love that for you. You should mm-hmm. get that done.
Yeah. Yeah. So Italy is definitely next if I can get out of the country. We did decide in 21 that we were going to start traveling again and just doing like places in the US we hadn't been. And we spent a month in New England and we got there the middle of September and got home the middle of October. And that was spectacular because we went up the East Coast first and all the leaves started turning and then mm-hmm. we came down through New York and so pretty much everywhere we went it went from green to orange while we were there.
Oh, and that's beautiful.
Oh, it was gorgeous and fabulous.
Yeah, we were in Milwaukee for a wedding in October, and we took an architecture cruise down the Milwaukee River, and it was that perfect, like the exactly as you're describing, the trees were just this bright, such a vibrant orange. And it was like, you take it for granted when you're living in the Midwest and it just kind of happens and like you notice it some, but when I'm living in Florida where there's no fall to see that, it's just like, wow, I understand why people talk about this so much. Yeah, that's absolutely gorgeous.
When we were in Texas, my kids were little and they would go for walks with their teachers, you know, really little, on a, like a leaf collecting trip. And, you know, like in the fall, and they'd come home and they're like, Mom, look at all these different colors. And it's like five shades of brown.
Right.
And having grown up in New York, I knew what would fall looked like. And when we moved up to Indiana, it was such a shock to their system. I mean, because they had never seen anything like that.
Yeah. Yeah. No, that's cool. That's cool. So I want to give you a little bit of time. So in terms of the authorship, what are some things that you've written? What are you working on? What's in the works?
So when I first started the business and I was doing a lot of presentations and speaking, everybody told me, if you want to get booked, you need to write a book. And so I wrote three marketing books. One was the Entrepreneur's Notebook, which really was just on, and they're all self-published, so they're not, I don't think any of them are available. I might have a copy somewhere. The first was just kind of a science of marketing. The second one was The Networking Junkie, and it was more of a, you know, how do you actually approach networking so it doesn't kill you? And then the last one was Business Map, which is kind of how to write a business plan in 10 weeks, which I've then kind of cut and pasted and modified into blogs and things like that. I've been blogging since probably 2008. So I have tons and tons of articles. I write a marketing column for Air Conditioning Today. I came out of the heating and air conditioning, industry. So I've written a column for them for like 7 years. I used to write a monthly column for the local business journal. And I'm doing more just blogging, and I'm trying to decide if I want to take on a little bit of a longer book, but I don't want to do anything else business related. I mean, I'll keep blogging and stuff. And I'm just trying to figure out if I want to channel my inner sci-fi geek and maybe do a little fiction. That would be a very unusual departure for me. So I haven't done it. Why not?
Yeah, definitely. I definitely say go for it. I am working very slowly on a work of fiction myself. And it's one of those things that it's whether anybody ever sees it or not, it's just so cathartic to put the words to paper. So I say go for it.
Cool.
Well, thank you so much for your time. This has seriously been such a fun conversation, and I really mean it. I mean, you are so refreshing. So I am anxious to check out your podcast More Than a Few Words just to get more Lorraine content. But anything that you want to leave my listeners with, where can they find you? Anything that you want to promote? Now's your time. The stage is yours, Lorraine.
Awesome. Well, if your audience, if there are business owners out there, then More Than a Few Words is a marketing conversation for business owners. The shows unlike this are really short, because with that audience, I know that they just don't have they've got 12 million things they're doing at once. So we try to keep the shows anywhere from 2 minutes to 10, really short and a little punchy and hopefully actionable. And you can find that wherever you listen to podcasts. If you're looking for me, probably the best place to find me is on LinkedIn. And if you just want to see pretty pictures, look at LorraineBall.com and you'll see some of my pretty photos, because that's my other passion. And we didn't even talk about that.
I know. Well, that we'll save that for next time. Anytime you want to come back, Lorraine, I would love to have you. So to my listeners, again, thanks to Lorraine. As always, you can find me on Twitter at BabblingDan. You can find me on Instagram at Daniel Burkett, and just keep sharing the show. Let me know what you guys are thinking, and I will talk at you next week. So Lorraine, thank you one last time.
Thank you.